Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
Yeah, I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I wanna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste. Yes, the muggers and the rapists didn't know what law and order was until the Toxic Avenger came to town.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The vandals and the perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're all a kid. Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit-and-run drivers. And gives all criminals their just desserts. The Toxic Avenger.
He was a hero.
He's a hero. He's a fighter. He's a lover.
Well, Melvin, you're beautiful.
The good citizens love him. The fat and corrupt hate him.
Kill that bastard for me. You gotta kill him.
Yeah.
Will he survive? For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
Welcome to They Call Us a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call Us a Movie. We are part of the Main Amy Network, and to find more from us, check out our website at themainamy.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themainamy. We're also now a proud member of Geek Fives Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call Us a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, so did you guys get past level 2? I had a hard time playing level 2 in this the game Toxic Avenger. So
I've never played it, man.
I hope we have enough to talk about.
That was a bit you probably should have let us know.
You should have asked us about it beforehand, Mark.
Did you mix up your podcast? Did you play the video game and not watch the movie? Is that what happened?
Oh shit!
Yeah, wrong fucking podcast, asshole. this week, once again, we are still locked in our houses. So as we've been doing this week, we're going to do the same thing again. What have you guys been watching, Dan?
I watched the Seinfeld stand-up special on Netflix, and I watched Heartbreak Kid so far. I know, Ant, you had talked about Seinfeld, right? You had seen it?
I had seen it.
It was pretty good. I think you got on a little... No, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you said it was just okay. right?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought you were like, it was awesome. I don't know why I'm putting that, like, those words in your mouth. Because I just wanted to disagree with you.
Nope. I thought it was fine.
Well, there goes that.
Yeah, he's a 65-year-old man, married with, like, two kids that are high school age going into college. So he's talking about that kind of stuff, which is not exactly... Yeah. I mean, he was never edgy, but he's also... He's talking to a very, very specific group of people at this point.
To me, it sounded more like ramblings than jokes.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of go one subject into the other. And it was just more of him expressing opinions, I guess, more so than jokes. Mm. But it wasn't too bad. I mean, he had some good lines in there. It's obviously it's Seinfeld. And yeah. he even lets on in the beginning, like, I could be anywhere in the world, but I'm right here. So,
yeah. You know. He had his moments. He definitely had his moments.
Yeah.
That's all you watched?
Yeah, I know the new Patton Oswalt special recently came out, so I might watch that as well.
Okay. It's interesting that you watched The Heartbreak Kid this week, but I'll get into that when I tell about what I watched.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mark.
Yeah, so I won't keep people in suspense too long with that lead-in, but, you know, finished The Last Dance. There's 100 things wrong with that documentary, but it's the best sports one I've seen in a while. Long form, not the 30 for 30s, you know, those in an hour or two format are probably much better. But yeah, it's like we were talking to my our friend John, and basically by the end of this, it made me realize that there's probably never going to be another basketball player like Michael Jordan, like ever, in terms of, you know, just the, because there's so pre-internet social media and all that, you know, there's this myth and aura about, you know, like the person Michael Jordan. And then also how big of a commercial thing he became for, like, you know, the Be Like Mike commercials. And, you know, basically everybody associates the company Hanes with him. You know, like, there's not going to be another basketball player, as much as LeBron James tries, that's going to be able to reach what he did. And this was the perfect, like, little behind the scenes stuff on what happened. So I recommend it for anybody that likes documentaries, and especially those that like sports documentaries. It's one of the better ones. Besides that, just the normal YouTube stuff. I've been playing a good bit of PC video games, because my computer is finally up to date and shouldn't have any issues going forward. So I've been able to play games that I have not been able to play in years, because my computer would just shut off if I tried to play them. So that's mainly what I've been doing for the last week.
Okay, great. I've been going on with my Marvel rewatches. So I've watched the original Avengers this week, as well as Avengers Age of Ultron, watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and watched Ant-Man. I also rewatched Zootopia, usually our kind of go-to for family watching when we're figuring out something to do, is just put on Disney Plus and put on a random Disney or Pixar movie. Also started watching Defending Jacob, which is an Apple Plus TV series starring Chris Evans, which is really good. And I watched the brand new Happy Madison film, The Wrong Missy. And this one is the one that ties into The Heartbreak Kid, because I believe it was written and by the team that wrote The Heartbreak Kid. And it's just as bad.
I think with Heartbreak Kid, I was in the right mindset and the right place when I watched it at first. Uh-huh. Because on second viewing, it had a few moments, but it didn't hit me as hard as it did the first time.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a movie where if you're around the right people, it's funnier.
Sure.
Because by myself, I was just thinking, oh, all right, well, that's kind of funny, you know. And I really just watched it because of the late Jerry Stiller, so I wanted to... Kind of just, I know he played heavily in it, so I just thought I would take a little trip and rewatch one of the comedy greats, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but The Wrong Missy, not only is it written by the team, it cribs heavily from The Heartbreak Kid. It steals, like, a lot of premise and a lot of, like, it's basically the same basic premise. Someone goes on a vacation with a woman that is an insane person, and... Yeah, it's terrible.
A lot of the same beats, it sounds like.
A lot of the same beats. It's like all about Steve meets The Heartbreak Kid with a little bit of Forgetting Sarah Marshall just thrown in there for good measure.
Okay.
David Spade is too old for this movie. He's like 55 at this point, and he's way too old to be in a movie where he's a single dude and he's hooking up with Lauren Lapkus, who maybe is in her mid-30s. And he looks every bit. He looks like, you know, the Boy movies, like The Boy 2, Brahms, The Boy.
Yeah.
He looks like The Boy if The Boy aged and then got plastic surgery.
Yeah, I don't know what the resurgence is of David Spade, right? Yeah. I've seen an episode of the David Spade Show, or I guess Late Night with David Spade or whatever.
Right.
And it's you know, standard late night, you know, talking heads show. Pretty funny. The guests are funny. But, it's basically The Soup, I suppose. And I don't know why Hollywood is pushing David Spade on us now at such a late age.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't dislike Spade, but he's definitely wrong for this movie. This is a movie that should have happened like 15 years ago, because it feels very much like a mid-2000s sort of movie. Like off the heels of like an old school. So it's like raunchy, but it's really more obnoxious than anything else. She's irredeemable as a person. And I like her, like, as an like comedian or actress. I like her. So it's disappointing to see like what should be like a star making turn have just like socially inept and just awful human being in this
now,
movie.
You're saying it's a Happy Madison production, right?
Yes.
All right. So how many fart jokes are in it? I want to say there's at least three.
There's not many. It's more like there. Yeah. I can't recall one specific one. There's a lot of like dick jokes, and she's very vulgar.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a 2005 movie taking place, like being made in 2020. It really is. And it feels a little misogynistic too. I don't usually label movies misogynistic, but I definitely feel it in this movie. And maybe it's just the fact that it feels just so out of place in terms of humor.
Yeah, I'm looking at a screenshot right now, and it's Lauren Lapkus giving Spade a lap dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a picture is definitely worth a thousand words there, folks. That's that's rough, because she's wearing a purple and gold sequin dress, and Spade just kind of looks really uninterested. Yeah, this is rough.
Like, I can't really compare it to any of the other Happy Madison Netflix movies, because I haven't seen them. I've seen The Ridiculous Six, and this is better than The Ridiculous Six, but it's not saying much.
I'm assuming it doesn't have Rob Schneider in it.
Oh, it does. It has Rob Schneider in it, because you can't have a movie without Rob Schneider. Oh, God. Man.
I mean, that man, he lucked out big time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure he got like $1 million dollars for this.
Is he wearing a certain color hat in this movie?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Is he wearing a different color face? I think that's really the more apropos
he's
question.
He's a little tan. Okay. He could be playing a Hispanic, to be honest with you.
Anything but a white guy.
Yeah. And that's about it. There is one thing that I want to, because it probably answers one of your earlier questions about me, you thinking that I thought Seinfeld was excellent. I didn't mention it on past shows, but I watched the Middleditch and Schwartz specials on Netflix.
I think that's what you were saying.
Those were excellent. Okay. Yeah, those are really good. Those guys are really funny together. So if you're into improv at all, check that out if you have Netflix. Well worth your time. They're like 50 minute. They're three specials, 50 minutes a piece, and it's just one setup each. It's pretty clever, interesting. And that's all I've been watching, except for this movie.
Yeah. Quick question: did you take the advice of our good friend Tia and use a certain part of Ultron as a pee break?
I did not. I did not need to pee, because I don't really need to pee when I watch movies. I'm an adult with an adult sized bladder. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't remember the last time when I've been in the movies that I had to go to the bathroom in the middle of the movie.
Look at Ant with his big bladder.
You know what?
That's okay.
Bladder shaming the rest of us.
Yeah. Gotta hang my hat on something these days. That's all I got. It's a giant bladder.
We had to sit through the Quintness family scene, so who's the loss there?
Just that brings that whole movie just to a screeching halt. That whole scene, but. I digress. This week, we are watching a movie that Mark picked. Mark, do you want to introduce our movie this week?
So I picked the Toxic Avenger, which I believe is 1984. Yeah, the main reason I did this was because I felt a little bad in our outside the podcast conversation where you guys were hoping that Death of a Cheerleader was a little more horror-based or a little more thriller. So I tried to look through and find horror movies, and I was having trouble. And then randomly this popped up when I checked Prime on Sunday. And I decided to choose it because I played the video game when I was growing up called Toxic Crusader, which is based off, there was an animated show, I believe.
Yep, Toxic Crusaders,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah, and I remember playing that video game and being as bad as I remembered when I replayed it after watching the movie. But yeah, so I was like, hey, I've never seen the actual movie. It's sort of this thing that's been in my atmosphere, you know, sort of, you know, I was like, oh, I kind of know this movie because of this game and this show, you know, but I've never actually seen the source material for it. So I thought I'd throw it out there. I thought it would be a little more horror than the campy it is. But that's my fault for not reading who produced it, which would have been my first tip. But that's the main reasons why I never seen it. And it's something that's one of those things that I've heard about and just went to kind of check it off a list or something.
Gotcha. Dan, what's your experience with The Toxic Avenger?
So I have had quite the experience with this movie. I've seen it several times. I watched the cartoon and I owned a bunch of the action figures. I even brought some of the action figures in for show and tell when I was in first grade or whatever. But the good thing about this movie, and it's, you know, this is definitely a product of the 80s where, you know, for our listeners who may not have been born in that time period, X-rated movies or rated R movies could easily become child-friendly cartoons and toy lines. You know, yep. RoboCop is one that comes to mind.
I had a RoboCop action figure.
So did I. I had RoboCop, I had the car, and I had, I forget what the other, you know, the giant mech was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had that, but, you know, as a kid, I wasn't allowed to see the movie, you know, where the cop gets brutally blown to bits, and, you know, it's one of the bloodiest movies you'll ever see, but they made it into a cartoon. And that's kind of what this movie is, and I never saw it as a kid, but, you know, again, I watched the cartoons, and I had the action figures, and, you know, you can kind of chalk it up to just the time period, or maybe bad parenting, I don't know, but they gave me the action figures and everything, so you don't get that nowadays, and it's kind of sad for our children now and the children that will be coming in the future, because they're not going to get that raw, like, unadulterated movie that's turned into a kid show, and everyone's lesser for it, I think.
Yeah, it'd be like getting, like, a Nickelodeon TV show, like, based around Black Phillip from The Witch or something like that.
Yeah, you know, yeah, anything Quentin Tarantino related, it's like, yeah. Oh, we're gonna make Django into a Saturday morning kids cartoon. Well, I don't think we could do that.
You got a magic flying horse or something.
Right, yeah, it's his companion horse, and they solve crimes in the deep south. I guess that kind of takes a special kind of branding, or people who just don't give an F, where it's, you know, yeah, we have one of the bloodiest movies ever, or we have one of the grossest movies ever in Toxic Avenger. And, well, yeah, we can market this towards little kids. You know, I would imagine there was probably like a serial that tied in with all of it. I would have to do a Google search, but,
yeah,
you know,
do that while you're talking.
With this kind of movie, as I was watching it and I'm writing down notes about what to pick on, you kind of realize that you're kind of like pistol whipping a blind kid with this, because this movie wants to be made fun of, right? We're pretty much just giving in to what the movie wants, reviewing it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
So there's nothing to be taken seriously about this movie. And I do believe that this was Troma's biggest movie.
It was it was definitely their first big one. It's kind of what put them on the map. Mm-hmm. I didn't check. It's hard to come across like numbers in terms of money it made, because it wasn't really released to theaters. But yeah. Definitely was the one that, you know, they call like Nightmare on like New Line Cinema. They call it the house that Freddy built, because that they made their money off of Nightmare on Elm Street, and they only existed because of that. And this is kind of the movie that is the answer to that. It's the house that Toxie built, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I. I was aware of the cartoon. I don't believe I ever watched it, although I did watch two episodes of it today. It's also on Prime after I watched the movie and finished my notes. And I didn't have any of the figures. I don't really know why I didn't. I'm sure that they probably wound up on a Christmas list at some point, and my parents were just like, I don't even know if he knows what this is, so we're just going to not do that. We'll get him funny, the G.I. Joes.
Look, and you're older than me. I think, what are you, 2 years older than me?
2 years old, yeah. Yep.
So you were, you know, obviously being older, and your parents knew well enough, like, yeah, this probably isn't right for him. Meanwhile, my parents, like, yeah, just give him whatever. Who cares? Oh, there's a creature with a giant nose that blows snot out of it. That'll entertain him for a couple months.
Yeah. And I think I didn't watch this movie until maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I watched it once and in 20-minute chunks because that's really all I could handle. And I watched it twice this week. And I liked it a little bit more on my last go-around. Because as Dan said, it's a movie that's not made to be taken seriously. It's made for the shock value of how violent and how gross out they could make it. There's still things that very much annoy me of this movie, but we'll get into that. But yeah, you know, it's a trauma movie. It really is. It really set the example that they kind of just lasted through that.
Yeah, and I also felt that there's like a line that they were just trying to push with everything. Like they want to be so edgy with it as well. Just down to how despicable all the bad, the evil people were in this movie. And it was like, so it was, if there is a level above cartoonishly evil, all these villains exceed that level. Yeah, they make you immediately. It was one of those things where I knew it wasn't supposed to take it seriously, but I felt myself getting a little angry about Bozo and Slug in this movie, going, they're taking this like way too far, whatever bit they're doing with these two guys here. And it doesn't really pay off either. We'll get to that. But yeah, it just felt like I thought it would be a little more serious is probably the right word. You know, I was hoping that it would be sort of like how you mentioned, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. How they just got sillier and sillier as it went. I was expecting that to be what this did. Was like the first one was like serious. You know, we're building this character. And then everything after that, from the cartoon to the game to the sequel, was like the silly, let's campy, you know, not take it seriously. But to see that they did it right from the beginning, like almost the first couple scenes of this movie, was a little surprising to me. And kind of set the tone for the whole thing. Where I probably would like it more maybe on multiple viewings. But yeah, I had this same reaction where if I wasn't watching it for this, I would have probably broken it up into chunks.
Okay. The Toxic Avenger from 1984, directed by Michael Hurt, and the incomparable, iconic Lloyd Kaufman, directing basically everything that Troma has ever put out. Starring Mitch Cohen, Mark Torgel, Andre Miranda, Pat Ryan Jr., Sarah Bell Levinson, Dan Snow, Gary Schneider, and Robert Pritchard. Holds an IMDb score of 6.3 and a Rotten Tomato score of 70%. Budget around $500,000 and made about $800,000 according to Wikipedia. It's the only place that has that information. And it runs a cool 79 minutes.
And the am I the only one that didn't that thought that Robert Pritchard, right, could have been like Ashton Kutcher's older brother or something like that? Like
Slug. I thought he was a stretched out version of Corey Feldman.
That's
probably the better comparison.
Yeah,
because he's got that headband that I'm thinking the Lost Boys.
Yeah, yep. Lost Boys. But that just would have been before the Lost Boys, so that they. Did Corey Feldman rip off Slug?
He might have. Yeah, this was 3 years prior. Feldman, he was probably in the Nightmare on Elm Street movie that he was in. I think the fourth one.
Yeah, this was post Goonies, so yeah.
And was it? What year was Goonies?
I thought that was like 83.
I don't really have any concept of time for Goonies, to be honest with you. 1985.
Oh wow.
Those guys were my favorite part of the movie, by the way. Bozo and Slug.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's just so over the top that you can't, to me, you can't help but just laugh at it. And I mean, when they're in the gym and they're just going crazy and making all the faces, and I know that's one thing that you hated, and
yeah,
but I was raffling watching that. Like, what is this guy doing? He would have rang the lunk alarm at Planet Fitness.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He kind of looked like Bill Paxton in The Terminator.
Okay.
Yeah.
When he was a little bit. The punk.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing I didn't like about them was just the theme of the whole car crashing thing. Seemed a little bit too edgy. Like they were trying to make people be shocked by it. You know.
I just hated
especially the girlfriends.
Faces.
So.
I hated everybody's faces in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Melvin's face. The faces Bozo and Slug make. Just every
I think Topsy's face might have been the best face.
Oh yeah.
Because he can't emote.
He can't emote. That was perfect for me. It was like, oh, thank God. Melvin, I was just like, I totally get it why Bozo and Slug hate this guy. This fucking face of his.
Melvin, Mark Torgel gives Clint Howard a run for his money. He's Clint Howard without all the charisma.
Sure.
Yeah.
This guy, man. Oh, I mean, I would have picked on him. And I'm nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even the overweight person in the gym that was probably made fun of was making fun of Melvin.
Yeah. He was definitely the enemy of my enemy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where everyone could just unite under one banner to just shit all over Melvin.
Yeah.
At least they chose an awesome name, right? Melvin. That's a great name to name your nerd main character.
Sure.
It's no Norman.
I think Melvin's worse. You never see any Melvins anymore.
Nope.
Right? Have any of us met a Melvin?
No, I don't think I have. I've met a Eugene. That's like really? Sort of the same. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely in the same branch, I'd say.
Yeah.
All right, we have to name our kid Melvin now.
That's what we're doing. So we'll meet one Melvin.
We have to make a pact, guys. Whoever has a child first, legitimately or illegitimately, has to name the kid Melvin.
Okay. Deal.
So we should inform John?
Well, no, out of the three of us.
Oh, okay.
The three amigos here.
All right. You guys want to get into the plot?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sure. Why not? I have no objection.
Dan, you got something for us besides the objections?
Of course. As I've been doing, I want to plug our good friend Tia from Geek Vibes Nation, a good friend of the podcast. She has her own podcast that you should check out. It's called The Top 10 with Tia, and it's a weekly podcast where Tia and her crew tackle a number of entertaining topics like the top 10 movies of the year or the top 10 worst on-screen couples. It has it all, so don't miss out.
All right. And we will be right back, but before we go, we are going to take a minute to listen to some friends of the podcast. So we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast.
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale-hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. It's me, George, from the Best Little Horror House in Philly, the show where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest at least. We've talked about groundbreaking classics like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Alien, but we've also got a lot of great ones coming up, including some very fun guests like Len Kabaczynski of Swamp Zombies and Red Letter Media fame, Caroline Williams, the star of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and Chase Williamson from John Dies at the End. So make sure you're subscribed to the Best Little Horror House in Philly, and I'll see you boils and ghouls over there.
And welcome back, and now it is time to get into the plot of The Toxic Avenger from 1984. We open on the standard trauma New York City skyline animation, and then a warning about the extreme violence of The Toxic Avenger. Then we get a skyline shot of the real New York, and a narrator comes on, talks about New York, technological progress, and the side effect, waste. We get a scene that starts off in Tromaville, which is a suburb of New York City in this world. Population 15,000 and a toxic waste capital of the world. We then zoom in onto Tromaville Health Club, We meet Melvin the janitor, who has the dumbest face in the entire world, as far as I'm concerned.
It's the most punchable face, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, so that, fucking punchable.
That was the exact point to have that freeze frame. It's just so you would have that reaction.
Yeah.
And this movie is chock full of punchable faces.
Absolutely. Just every single person's got a face you could punch.
From wall to wall.
And then we see the tightest packed gym in the history of gyms, which in today's climate feels very weird. Just people just on top of each other working out.
Is this what the 80s were like in a gym? Is this how gyms are now, Dan?
Yes and no. But it's
much
mostly,
less smoking, right?
Much less smoking. People aren't wearing Speedos in it, as far as I can tell. But yeah. They, you know, people do grab their crotches every now and then and, you know, act a fool. But it's not as weird, I'll say that.
Okay, then we get a whole montage of these people working out as Body Talk, a song that we will get very familiar with throughout the movie, plays. We got some shots of boobs and butts and dudes and Speedos. And then we come across our two villains, Slug and Bozo, who just hate the Mop Boy. Mop Boy, they're hanging out in a hot tub with their two hoes, and the Mop Boy comes over to their hot tub and he gets distracted and he accidentally drops the mop into the water, which Bozo gets stressed out and really fucks up his karma. So he runs off really upset. So he does some bench presses and makes the worst faces while he does so.
He looks like he's constipated while trying to do bench press.
Meanwhile, Slug walks around looking like a stretched out Corey Feldman, smoking in the middle of a health club and making out with his girlfriend. And then all of a sudden, they go from making out to just straight up fucking in the locker room.
My favorite part of this is the girlfriend is, you know, asking him, "Oh, do you think this is a good idea? What if someone comes in?" And stretched out Corey Feldman tells her, I paid the owner like $10. We have it until tomorrow afternoon. I think it's like middle of the day already.
Yeah.
So they have it for the whole night into the next day.
Yeah. That owner is really easy to pay off.
Apparently. I was gonna say $10 gets you all that.
But what did $10 get him? Because Melvin walks in immediately. You would think that would come with some security details, like, hey, no, can't go in there, or like a caution tape on the locker room. It's like, there's busted pipe. You gotta stay out of there.
I guess $10 doesn't get you a locked door.
Sure. Maybe you should have sprang for $20.
Right. The safety deposit.
So they start fucking. Mark, were you gonna say something?
No.
They start fucking, and then Melvin walks in and makes the worst faces, and then they threaten his life, and he runs away. Again, the worst faces.
But I at the same time, that probably made it much better for Slug and his girlfriend, right? Because now she has the knife out, and they probably get into some weird stuff there.
Oh, absolutely.
So that $10 might have gotten them pretty far.
Might have gotten her pregnant.
That's the director's cut, I think. We find out about that.
And you could already tell this wasn't your typical movie at this point, is that at no point did they try and stop or cover up when they saw him staring at her.
Mm-mm.
It was just like, get out of here, in the same position they were in.
Or I'll fucking cut you.
Yeah.
Then at night, so they're outside at night, so they weren't using the locker room for the full time they bought for. Bozo's gang is driving around while they talk about how many points you get for hitting people. So this is a game they play, is where they hit people and they get points. Then they find some dumbass kid on a bike that is riding his bike out in the middle of the night for some reason.
That actress that played his sister or whatever was definitely like somebody's like real sister or girlfriend or something that worked on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't too sad that he got hit by a bike because he had it coming, I think.
The kid?
Yeah. Yeah. He's been riding his bike like that.
No, it's like 11 o'clock at night and he's just this dumbass kid. Where's he going?
Are you really? You're begging for trouble there, kid.
Yeah.
You're in the waste capital of the world. Riding around on your bike like a nerd at 11 o'clock at night. Something's going to happen.
Here's a question. Where would you rather live? Would you rather live in Tromaville or Gotham City?
Oh, everyone seems easy in Tromaville, like all the women. So probably Tromaville.
Okay.
Gotham, I feel like I just walk down the street and a guy in a weird costume would come and, you know, like do something weird to me. Like, Gotham has a guy named Crazy Quilt. I don't want to live in a town like that.
gonna knit you a sweater.
Yeah, but it, like, yeah, it's like angsty. You know, the sweater is made with angst. I don't need that. I don't need that.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay.
It was like that one tweet where, you know, if you taught theater without teaching humanities, is that how you get Batman villains?
Exactly.
So Boza runs over the kid, but he initially survives and tries to crawl away. So he backs it up and runs over his head, which is a pretty gruesome effect made by injecting food dye into a watermelon. Head splatters all over the concrete. So the girls get out and snap some Polaroids of the body. And I think they get horny about it.
They're not upset by it.
No, they love it. Back at the health club the next day, the aerobics class is going on where a teacher is trying to give instructions to his class. And the slug puts a snake down his shirt for no reason. So then he starts making weird movements and the class just copies him. Classic hijinks. Bozo and his gang is playing racquetball and dumb-faced Melvin is staring at them through the glass. So this gives the girls an idea on how to get back at Melvin for having a dumb face, I suppose. He really hasn't done anything besides that. So while he's mopping the pool area, Julie, Bozo's girlfriend, tells Melvin to meet her in the girls' locker room after his shift. Meanwhile, truck drivers carrying toxic waste pull over in front of the club so they could snort some dope. And then Melvin's
shift... They snort all the dope.
Yep. After his shift, Melvin goes to the girls' locker room and finds Julie there in a bikini. She says that she's tired of the way Bozo treats everyone and wants to get back at him by fucking Melvin. So she tells him she wants him to dress up in a tutu and come out to the pool. And then she shows him a little boob action and then, you know, trounces off. So he goes to change. He's come out to the pool and all the lights are off. She tells him to kiss her and he kisses what he thinks is her. But they turn on the lights and he's been kissing a sheep the whole time. And the whole health club is there making fun of him.
And there's some really strange people making fun of him. Like, I don't think these people look in the mirror very often.
No, it's literally anyone that they could get off the street to be in this scene.
You want to go make fun of a nerd? Yeah. we'll pay you $30. Sold. I'd do it for free.
Yep. Melvin gets so upset that he runs away and ultimately jumps out the window and into an open container of toxic waste on a flatbed truck.
I love those guys in the flatbed truck. It was like, let's pull over. No, they told me not to pull over. But I got this nondescript bag of white powder. Oh, shit, we're going to pull over right now.
Also, why are they traveling on a flatbed truck with toxic waste with no covers on it? One, they hit a bump, one of them goes over. If they turn, one of them should have.
It's the 80s,
off.
Man.
It's the Reagan 80s. There was no restrictions. There's a lot of Democrats.
I guess toxic waste has produced some good heroes, I guess. Maybe that's their reason.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So he jumps it and he falls into the toxic waste. Then the crowd goes out of the health club and watches him writhe around on the ground as they watch. Bozo says he's faking it. The cops come to try and help him, and one of them touches Melvin, and his hands immediately burst into flames.
No one checks on the officer.
No. I was reading trivia, and then on my second watch, I made sure to look for it. Apparently, that the fire effect dripped onto the guy that played Melvin, so he actually catches fire during that scene. It was like an overhead shot where you see the hands on fire, and there's like a flame that falls off the hands onto Melvin, who's on the ground, and you can see him like start swatting it away.
And then Kaufman just said, go with it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny because... is a little bit tangent wise, but I was watching when I was watching Cursed Films, they were talking. He had made an appearance, I think, either on the Crow or on the Twilight Zone, the movie, and just talking about safety and the precautions that they do on set for trauma. I guess at this point, now that they have a little bit more money, so it was interesting to see, you know, these kinds of almost fails. I think there was one thing that happened during the car chase too, but that was a little tangential. So then Melvin gets up and runs down the street, and then he bursts into flames out of nowhere, and then goes home and locks himself in the bathtub, leaving green footprints everywhere he goes. He jumps in the tub and his hair starts falling out, and he starts to mutate as his skin still smokes. His mom, listening in to the bathroom, thinks he's jerking off.
Yeah. She's super proud about it. Yeah. Kind of weird.
And then Melvin decides to just run off into the streets, I guess. So we get a night scene where skid row punks are hanging out on the street. Cigar Face and a couple of punks talking about the score they hit and their plans to bribe a beat cop, which is a weird thing. It's like, we're going to bribe this low-level cop to look the other way.
Yeah, he has no pull whatsoever.
Yeah. Like, all right, well, what if the other cops show up? But he's like the only clean cop on the force is basically what they say.
He's the Jim Gordon of Tromaville.
Yeah. O'Cleary is his name, and he shows up, and they try to bribe him, but he won't take it, so they jump him instead.
Now, so, question, the cop, does he go in and out of an Irish accent throughout the movie, or mm-hmm. does he constantly have the Irish accent?
He kind of goes in and out.
He does, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing it, because in the first time you see him, he has the regular, just, you know, regular accent, and then when he's being interviewed, he has the Irish accent.
So, yeah.
Like, did he? I think it's like at that point he found out his character's last name was Irish.
Yeah.
I should play it up as an Irish cop.
It's to the point where it surprised me when he the first time he has it. It's like oh, I guess he's supposed to be Irish.
Right. He just kind of, I guess he goes at his own pace.
Yeah. So Cigar Face puts a cigarette out on his forehead, and they all get some good punches in, and then they try to shoot his dick off. But then Melvin shows up and starts beating them up. He picks up Cigar Face, tosses him away, and then breaks off one guy's nose, and then he pulls the trans woman's two eyes out, then brutalizes them some more. So I'm not sure if they were, like, if it was really supposed to be a trans woman or just some guy in a dress for no reason.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell.
I mean, this movie's not exactly woke, so.
Not at all.
This movie is by far the least woke movie we've watched, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Fritz the Cat comes close, but.
Yeah.
I mean, at least they were trying to give a message across in Fritz the Cat.
Yeah, there was some message in that unwokeness of Fritz the Cat.
Yeah, this one is just balls to the wall, misogyny and racism?
Racism. Homophobia, yeah. Transphobia. Yeah. It's all there.
Yeah, again, Reagan's 80s, baby.
Yep. Arnold rules Thunderdome in 1984.
It's weird. We went from watching the most depressing movie and reviewing it to the most despicable movie.
Probably.
Right. Yeah. And this is a low for they call this a movie, I think.
Yeah. You're welcome. Wait till next week.
it's the perfect back. You're
next
back.
Week, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now I got to prepare myself.
So then Melvin picks up Cigar Face by the balls and throws him in a trash can. And then this is where I noticed that Melvin still has the tutu. I didn't realize that until this moment. The cop is taken to the hospital. Go ahead.
He wears it throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah. I didn't realize until my second viewing today. And the cop is taken to the hospital, and he tells his story about the guy that saved him. And the mayor and the other cops discuss what happened. And they're all dirty cops, so it's a bad thing. Because Cigar Face was one of their biggest earners, they say.
Yeah, and if you didn't get it, the chief of police was German.
Yeah.
And he liked to do certain salutes and things like that.
There's quite a few Germans in this movie. And I don't know if there's a German population in New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know. At least in Tromaville there is.
The great German immigration of 1980.
And apparently they're all sons or daughters of people that have escaped Nuremberg.
One of my other favorite characters in this movie is the mayor, because he is constantly sweating.
Well, he's a very large man.
Oh yeah, he must have gone through several shirts in one take, because he is just. There's the old Kevin James bit when he talks about how he sweats peeling an orange. I mean, this guy sweats just by being, I think.
Yeah,
just by
I think
taking
that's,
up the area.
That's the reason why they have him on the massage table in one of his scenes, just so he doesn't have to wear a shirt, because they, you know, they ran out of clothes for him.
Right.
Yeah. Like, our wardrobe budget.
It was a $500,000 budget. $300,000 went to his clothing. I think that's the reason why he's constantly sitting. I think there's only one scene where he's seen moving.
Yeah.
And it's at the very end.
Yeah, probably.
They probably shot that first. Like, all right, what's his name?
All right, get him Pat back Ryan. Down. Lay him down.
All right, Pat can only be on his feet for 5 minutes at a time. Doctor's orders. So we'll shoot the ending first.
Yeah, being vertical is hazardous to his health.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, honestly, like, we joke about it, but it probably was. he's definitely one of the guys who you would see at like Disney World in the scooters.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He would just ram right into you because he was a dick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I like how unabashedly evil he is, though.
It's great.
Yeah,
right. He's like, just like cartoonishly, like Mark was saying, cartoonishly evil.
Because there's the one scene, we'll get to it later, that they're talking about. Yeah, he's really cleaned up the streets. All the criminals are behind bars, and he's like, almost all the criminals. We're still here.
And he's the way they laugh is, you know, it's the classic villain laugh.
Yeah.
And he and his cronies. I mean, they have women dancing behind them. It's dude. I mean,
to no music. That's they're just dancing around to no music.
The ultimate villain task.
Right. These girls. Dance for me, ladies. Dance.
There's no music.
Yeah, I think
dance.
They cocks back the gun.
Can you imagine being an actress? Because there's a couple scenes of him where he's on the massage table. Can you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine being cast and the director tells you you're gonna rub that man down, and you just kind of have to, like, you know, this is, I'm trying to make it.
Right.
Could you tell your friends with a straight face that that's me?
just never name the movie that you were in. I don't even know what it's called. I don't even think it's ever going to get released.
Well, by a movie poster. Hey, Toxic Avenger, isn't that the movie? Nope, no, it wasn't. Nope. Thinking of something else.
Right. Who are you? Leave me alone.
This is back at the health center. Slug and his girlfriend are flirting around in the sauna, and he makes a weird elephant man reference. And then that scene happens. That's it.
Yeah.
Melvin tries to go home, but he scares his mom away. So he sad Hulk ventures around Tromaville until he comes upon a junkyard, which he starts to organize a cleanup and turn into a place where he could stay. And then the mayor and some board members have a meeting. This is the one where they have their sex party with the women dancing. I don't really understand what deal they broker here. I rewound it like 3 or 4 times to get exactly what they're trying to do, but more or less that they mentioned that an old power plant is being replaced by a dump. And then they also say that the new plant is going to be 20 feet away from the town reservoir. And then they laugh. And there's a newspaper that's just strategically placed on it, on the couch, that just reads.
I think essentially what they were saying is that they want to move the dump and all away from where it is because it was prime waterfront real estate.
Yeah.
And they said, well, the other dump location puts it close to the reservoir. And they were like, basically like, so?
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand about, like, what's the new dump, like, they've already decided where it's going to go. They, like, really skipped that part for me, that logic.
And it's weird, like, they're having the sex party, but it's, you know, there's women there, but there's no drugs. It's like sandwiches.
Right. Well, that's the mayor's one request.
But it's, that's a
weird thing to bring. You don't get that big by snorting coke all day.
That's right. It's, you can't have an orgy on an empty stomach, I guess.
Yeah. Oof. Imagine fucking with a stomach full of just hoagie. Just 5 pounds of deli hoagie meats in your stomach. I guess if he's on the bottom, maybe it's not as bad.
Right. But very minimal.
You could probably just continue a lot of sloshing around.
Oh, yeah. Just like hold the sandwich here while you're riding me so I could just eat while you do that.
It's like George Costanza's wet dream, essentially.
The newspaper headline on just strategically placed on the cap says the top poles taped at sex parties, which I guess is where they're at. And girls are dancing with no music. And then we cut to a restaurant scene, which is the most happening restaurant since the McDonald's and Mac and Me. Yep.
People dance. The Mexican place.
Apparently that was the real name of the place. People dancing outside and making out. The cook drinking liquor from his crotch. Then a group of thugs come in to rob the place. Leroy, Rico, and Frank, who get introduced like a band.
Yep. Which isn't that terrible. I thought that was kind of clever.
Yeah, they had some charisma.
Yeah.
Leroy starts harassing a woman with a baby and then some teen girls, kissing one on the cheek. Leroy, the actor that played Leroy, got so upset that he had to point a gun at a baby that he quit immediately after filming this scene. And then Pete Buttigieg steps up and tries to talk some sense into them and gets blown away by Leroy.
That's really good.
I think he gets pretty much what Pete would probably get.
In that situation, absolutely. Yeah. And then Frank comes upon a blind woman, has Leroy shoot the guide dog, and then tries to rape the blind girl.
Again, you guys in your animal abuse.
They didn't actually kill a dog in this one, though. Because later on, you could see they cut to a shot of the dog with bullet holes in him, and he's still breathing very heavily.
His guts are hanging out.
Yeah, but the dog itself is dead. In the context of the movie, yes, but they didn't actually kill a dog, which I wouldn't put past trauma.
Yeah,
exactly.
But you can see the dog clearly just going he's laying there with his guts hanging out.
It essentially it has like the fake puke on it.
Yeah.
Like the rubber puke. But I mean, I'm watching it, and I got a dirty look from Jen when we were watching it. Like, really, this had to happen? Well, I'm not happy about it either. I take it up with Aunt and Mark. They're the ones that forced me to watch these movies.
Did you tell her it was the Reagan 80s?
No. I did not. Dogs were getting shot all the time, babe, all right? I'm sorry.
Apparently that was the biggest complaint that people had against Troma, was that scene. It is kind of, like, the whole sequence is kind of funny, though, because they train the dog to slide, and that's actually the dog sliding on his own.
It's not.
It is. According to the trivia, that's what they said. The dog was trained to slide backwards.
Oh, that's so much better than Air Bud.
Yeah.
That's so great.
It's super goofy. Like, I know I hate seeing dogs die, but I kind of chuckled a little bit just because it's such a goofy, like, sequence of shots that happened in that moment. But yeah, they kill a dog in this movie, which nobody likes to see. And then Melvin shows up. And he immediately rips Frank's arm off and beats him with it. The actor playing Frank was actually an amputee, so the arm was a fake the whole time.
Whoa, really?
Yep.
God damn.
Yeah,
he was
wearing a prosthetic throughout all of it. Yeah.
Chalking up the trauma.
Yeah. Melvin slaps Leroy around with it, and then he gets into a fight with Rico, who knows a little bit of kung fu moves. Rico eventually breaks out some nunchucks and then a samurai sword that just happens to be hanging on the wall of a Mexican restaurant.
It's so dangerous. I kept thinking of the scene from Shaun of the Dead,
yeah,
where the Winchester, shotgun. Like, well, the gun, yeah, the, yeah, the gun doesn't really work. It's there for show.
Yeah. So he tosses Rico in the back, and then Leroy pops back up, and Melvin turns him into a milkshake, shoving the ingredients down his throat, and then the mixer in his face. Then Melvin clamps Rico's hands into a fry basket and sticks his hands in the hot oil. And he goes to console the blind woman, who somehow becomes more and more undressed throughout the scene, even though she stopped getting raped with fully clothed. And he helps her home. Blind woman brings Melvin home, and some slapstick blind humor takes place. She falls down. She drops things. She hits him in the dick with her cane. And then the cops get to the taco restaurant, and they all have some tacos as they check out the murder scene and get witness statements from the cook.
You know what I enjoy about this? Sorry to interrupt. So at this point, we still haven't seen the Toxic Avenger's face.
Mm-hmm.
So they're treating this like a Jaws moment, where mm-hmm. they're really doing their best to, you know, keep you in suspense. Or like, oh, you can only see his body, and you don't see the hideous face and everything. And it's just like, well, what are we really hiding from? I mean, the kid who played Melvin was gross enough. So could it really be any worse than that? Just show us what he looks like. This isn't one of those historic moments, guy. All right.
Yeah. Sarah wants to touch Melvin's face, but he freaks out. So she reads his palms instead. And then she accidentally grabs his crotch. There's a press conference with the cops to discuss the monster. So they bring in a German scientist. And he says the monster is only destroying evil. That's basically what happens in that press conference scene.
And just says, yeah.
Yeah, because he's German, guys. Back at the health club, some dude is dealing some steroids, and the mayor is getting a rub down with a giant sandwich. All these scenes are the same setups and scenes used in Body Talk montage from the beginning. Steroid dealer goes to do some workouts, then Melvin comes in and slams his head in the weights, crushing it. And then Wanda goes to the sauna and starts rubbing one out to the pictures of the dead kid's body because it turns her on. Melvin shows up and picks her up and drops her on the hot coals. This is the first time we see his face because he puts on the elephant man covering, and then she takes him off thinking it's Slug. But then
the whole time I was watching that scene, I kept thinking, if you'll have to speak up, I'm wearing a towel. She's like, Melvin, like, oh, Slug, you really going to do that again? And she's talking to him, and he's toxic Avenger isn't saying anything. Like, oh, you have to speak up. He's wearing a towel.
So she gets hers, I guess. I guess that kills her. Then after, Melvin goes into the alley and takes piss, and he pisses green. Then a pimp dressed like Harvey Keitel and taxi driver pops out of a limo and offers Melvin a 12-year-old prostitute. So Melvin picks him up by the neck, and then a whole group of punks get out of the limo to beat up Melvin, and he kicks all their asses and steals their limo.
It's like a clown car of punks.
Yeah. Yeah, they just keep coming.
Then a montage of Melvin doing good things, like he saves a couple of kids from getting run over by Bozo, helps an old lady across the street, helps a woman open a jar of, I think it was popcorn kernels, and then because he's radioactive, as he's opening it, it all turns to popcorn, popcorn. He saves a baby from something. We just see him handing the woman her baby back, and then people start wearing shirts with the monster's face on it saying, I love the monster, or whatever it says. Then we get a rundown from the crooked cops and political figures. The prisons are overrun with criminals. They almost got all the criminals, but according to a very self-aware mayor, not them, because they're still criminals.
You should have just winked at the camera there. Not everyone winked.
I just like that he is not afraid to say, yep, we're criminally active.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Yep. Then Melvin gets jumped by a cigar face and a bunch of other goons who all point guns at him in a circle. So he jumps really high as they shoot, and they all manage to shoot each other instead.
I wish they would have played the $6 million man. Such a wasted moment.
Meanwhile, Sarah gets hassled on the street by a bunch of bikers. Then Melvin comes to her rescue, and they run away. Then we get a love montage with Melvin and Sarah all set to a fake Journey song. They have picnic, they have sex, they have breakfast. He brings her back to his shack, and they dress it up so a woman could live there, I guess. Back at the health club, Melvin surprises Julie in the locker room, and apparently Marissa Tomei, too, is in the scene, but I never would have guessed it. That was what she looked like, because she looks very different. But she's in a towel, she comes in and screams and runs away. It's apparently Marissa Tomei.
That was really Marissa Tomei?
Not Julie, this is another girl.
Oh, okay. Wait, so wait, she's in this movie?
Supposedly. I could send you a picture. Yep. Yeah, let me send you a picture of who they say is Marissa Tomei and Toxic Avenger.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It doesn't look like her, though. So I'm
scared. Studded event.
But
it's listed in IMDb as uncredited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems to be confirmed, but I'm having a hard time believing that this person is actually Marissa Tomei. Because it looks nothing like her.
I didn't even notice. Yeah. Now, in this scene...
I'm going to send it to the chat.
Okay.
On Skype.
In this scene, he surprises her, right?
Yeah.
And for some reason, him surprising her surprises him, right? Because she gets away somehow. And he's just like, oh, wait a minute. I wasn't expecting that. Well, you were waiting for her.
Yeah.
Were you not expecting her to be totally terrified of your gross face?
I guess not. You guys see that picture?
Yeah. I see nothing. I don't see anything.
Skype Messenger.
Yeah. I'd have to see her not screaming, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it being her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't. Doesn't look like it to me. But IMDb.
But we digress.
IMDb has never led us astray.
It's true. But supposedly that's her.
I wonder if Lloyd Kaufman put that in there. Just yeah, we'll say Marissa Tomei was in it. Give us a little bit of credibility.
Right. Julie runs after she sprays Melvin in the eyes with hairspray and then winds up in a vast boiler room. She winds up in some sort of utility closet, and then Melvin busts through the door and stabs her with some scissors. It's kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, and then she dies off screen, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Bozo and Slug are waiting for Julie, who has the car, and Bozo's getting really stressed for waiting for him, fucking up his karma again. So they decide to beat up an old lady with a crowbar and steal her car. And Melvin shows up.
That part made me laugh out loud, too.
That's pretty funny.
I mean, I don't condone violence, but just the total slapstick way they beat this woman up is very, very funny. Like, how would you like to drive an imported, Japanese car? Like, yeah, and they just go to town on this woman.
They really beat the shit out of her.
They do.
Melvin shows up. Yeah. Melvin shows up and they try to run him over, but he manages to jump over the hood and cling onto the roof. So a car chase scene occurs. They try to swerve Melvin off the roof. He pulls Slug out of the car and then gets in and starts manhandling Bozo as he drives, causing a lot of property damage and several car accidents and almost killing perfectly innocent people.
I was going to say, he does more bad than good in this scene.
Yeah.
He leads them into a group of children.
Yep. Yeah. Eventually, Melvin pulls the steering wheel off, and he and Bozo go careening off a cliff, and the car explodes. Melvin gets out of the charred car unharmed, but Bozo is dead. And then we cut to scene in a laundromat, and a tiny woman, Mrs. Haskell, brings in her son's jeans to get clean because of cum stains all over it.
I don't think they know what it looks like in reality, because yeah, that just kind of looked like he maybe got some butter on there, or I don't know.
Some powdered sugar.
Right, he had some powdered sugar on there. Are you telling me they didn't have the budget for semen? Come on.
I know.
Come on.
It's, as far as I know, it's free.
Right.
You just make it yourself.
That's what I've been told. I don't know. I don't pay attention to such things.
So the owner, while he's trying to ring her up, gets a ticket on his car, so he goes out to stop the meter maid. But meanwhile, Melvin walks in and picks a fight with a woman, first chasing her around and then picking her up and putting her in the washing machine, and irons her to death, which you would think that this does not hold up his MO, but it does later on.
Yeah, I was a little confused. I'm like, well, it's the first time we see this woman, or have ever heard of her, and Toxie goes, you know, buck wild on her.
Yeah. So like, wait, I guess he's supposed to be able to sense that people are evil. Like, he knows the evil that they do.
What a dumb superpower.
Yeah. So, in full disclosure, that is a superpower that he has in the cartoon. They never explicitly say that that's what he does in this movie, though.
Yeah, I mean, if he's an X-Man, they probably leave him behind on missions.
Yeah, like he has
sense good and evil. We already know. We're fighting Magneto. He's bad. Forget right. it.
It's like a spider sense in the cartoon where like he starts to glow or something like that.
Just the radiation.
Melvin returns home to Sarah, who's reading a Braille magazine, and Melvin says that he's out of control and he can't stop killing people. So Sarah suggests that they go somewhere where they can be by themselves. So they plan to go to a place in the country off of some farm property. During a press conference, Mayor finds out that Mrs. Haskell was running a white slavery ring. And then they decide that they're going to cover up Mrs. Haskell's background to turn public opinion against the monster.
It was such a random reason why she was evil.
Yeah. It almost feels like a note. Like, you know what? Like, that whole scene in the laundromat, love it, but sort of doesn't stick to his M.O., so
we have to add in something here.
I'm trying to figure out a reason why he would have killed her.
And let's make it edgy and make it white slavery.
Mm-hmm.
We all know how much of that goes around.
So the cops create a task force to kill the monster. Cops go searching for him and they find him and Sarah in a tent outside the city. So they go tell the mayor. The mayor calls the governor to get the National Guard to help. The governor sends the guard, but he says to capture him, don't kill him. And the mayor twirls his mustache and says, I'll see about that.
You know what was pretty funny about that scene when the cops find him and Sarah in the countryside? Sarah's wearing a bikini for no reason.
Yeah.
And she's not wearing it ever again.
Nope.
You know, that's a strange thing to wear in the country.
Yeah, right.
Just a random time.
It only serves so that they can have that scene. Where that would be the only reason the other cop would want to look through the binoculars.
Oh, yeah.
There was a girl in a bikini. With her,
and she's in a bikini.
Oh, let me see.
That's so weird. You know, you could have just done that for no other reason. You don't even need a reason to do it. It just doesn't fit.
She didn't want to get naked, so that was the reason.
Right, you never see her fully nude, right?
Yeah, so they were like,
and she's the best looking one. Yeah. He's the best looking one in the movie. How are you going to do that to us, Troma? Come on.
I think it's like our only credit, too.
I think a lot of people quit after this movie, and I don't blame
them. They just couldn't get work after this. Like, ooh.
Or they just didn't want to get work. This was the wrong
like, is this what all Hollywood is like?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back to working in my dad's hardware store. I'm done with this.
The National Guard rolls in with tanks. Townspeople are very upset that they're going to kill Melvin. The whole town shows up to the tent location. All guns pointed at
sleepers.
Yeah, right?
Right. They somehow...
at the tent.
I'm sorry. I was going to say they somehow roll two tanks and a whole mob of people up to their front door without them realizing what the hell's going on.
Remember, they were just like maybe it was just balls deep.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense. His evil sensing power is probably no good when he's balls deep. Right. It gets deactivated.
He can't have an erection and use the sense at the same time.
Right. And it's definitely a double-edged sword.
So all guns pointed at the tent. Melvin and Sarah get ordered out of the tent. Melvin's mom and a bunch of kids stand in the way of the firing squad, but Melvin then tells them to leave. Then the National Guard and the cops decide to stand down at the mayor's orders to shoot Melvin. So the mayor takes it upon himself. He tries to shoot Melvin a couple times to no effect. And then Melvin disembowels him in front of everybody.
I don't think at this point anyone knows the mayor's evil, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, they could say he wants to kill Melvin. That's as far as they know.
Right. But there's a bunch of posters that say, re-elect mayor to keep the city healthy. And it's never really said that, he's a crooked mayor. Right. So he literally disembowels the mayor in front of the town and the National Guard. Like, oh my God, he's a monster. Kill him.
Yeah. Everybody's horrified, but then they cheer after it. Like, oh my goodness. Yay!
He must have been bad. He was a fat guy.
That's basically it. Right. So then Sarah, for some reason, can't find Melvin in this crowd. Oh. He eventually finds her. And then the crowd cheers. And that's the end of the movie.
There's a voiceover. Like, if you're ever in trouble, the Toxic Avenger will be near. And for God's sake, I hope that's not true. Because I would rather have literally anyone else save me other than the Toxic Avenger.
And there was a freeze frame ending.
A freeze frame ending. That's right, Mark. It's not a very good one. Okay. Because it's a reused shot.
Mm-hmm. Is it one of those things where you're in trouble and you're just like, oh God, I hope someone comes helps me. And then the Toxie shows up and you're like, oh, I hope someone comes and helps me.
I said, I hope somebody comes to help me.
I was really looking forward to the A-Team or something.
I'll take like Gem in the Holograms at this point. Just go away.
I'd even settle for Hawkeye.
If Jenny listened to this, you would get an earful, Mark.
Let's make that joke for an audience that won't listen.
Listen, man, you're going to bring down all the Renner fans on us, and that's a group of people we can't afford to piss off.
Bring them on.
All the rough and tumble folk riding around.
They got all their camping equipment from the Renner store before it cools down.
Riding around in their Jeeps and their flannel. It's a scary group.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a shitty ending to a shitty movie.
Yep. I mean, it knows it's shitty. So I guess there's some credit to that. But, that can only go so far. I wish I liked trauma movies more than I do. Really do. I try and like them. And I didn't hate it the second time I watched it today, but yeah, it's just a lot of it's lost on me. I think Lloyd Kaufman's like that too for me. I saw him, he shows up on an episode of Angry Video Game Nerd, and he's obnoxious throughout that whole thing.
It's unwatchable.
Yeah.
Because he's making dirty jokes, and they're not funny. Yeah. And he wears out his welcome in very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like, I think he was playing the Toxic Crusaders game during that episode, and he's just like a cruise ship comedian basically. He's got like these like that would go on at like 12:30 at night when everyone's all nice and liquored up.
Now I don't know if he has extended family or like he's a grandfather. I wouldn't let my child anywhere near him, if he's family. We don't talk to Uncle Kaufman. We stay away from him without adult supervision.
Well, without him, we wouldn't have the Guardians of the Galaxy movies that we have.
Oh, what's his name was? Gunn was
James Gunn. Yeah.
Yeah. He was inspired by Kaufman.
He wrote a few trauma movies.
Oh, did he?
During the 90s. Yeah, I think Tromeo and Juliet was one of his.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that he cut his teeth on there, and Kaufman shows up at least in the first one as like a prisoner.
Yeah, I think he's one of the inmates. Yeah. That's right. I remember hearing that. Yeah, I mean, I don't care, and he sucks. I'm sorry. I get that these movies kind of hold a special place in like B-level cinema history, and he's one of those guys who really kind of made it on his own. But I mean, I can't sit here and pretend that, you know, I care.
Yeah, I think his most enduring thing is his idea that, you know, if you've got a movie that you want to do, go out and make it yourself. Don't wait for anybody else. He's got his like whole like make your own goddamn movie, I think, book series and or like classes or whatever. So I appreciate his that kind of like rebel attitude, sort of, you know, just like, well, get friends together and make your movie yourself. Don't wait around. So I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like I wish I liked Troma movies more than I do. I watched Class of Nukem High not too long ago. It's just out of my peripherals of movies I like. Like I probably won't watch this again for another 15 years, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
Until they reboot it eventually.
Yeah, and it is, actually. They're set to reboot it. It is being directed by Macon Blair, who is director on I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, was a Netflix film. He's also acted in Blue Ruin and Green Room.
Oh, Green Room is pretty good.
Excellent movie.
Yeah, I like that movie. So is this going to be more of a gritty reboot?
I don't know. He was announced as the director, writer director in March of 2019. So it's about as much information as I got.
Oh, he actually commented on your Twitter post.
Yes.
That's right. I remember seeing that now. That's interesting. Man, I wish I could get excited for it. And, you know, maybe I'll watch the reboot. I have no idea if it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime, just out of curiosity. But yeah, I mean, again, this movie, it's not well acted. It's not well shot. And again, I know that's what it's going for. But if you're going to sit down and review a movie, you got to review it for what it is. And it's just that's what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, any final thoughts?
Yeah. I'm just a little upset it wasn't as, closer to like a more gritty horror than I thought. But then again, I didn't look and see who it was, because I try to, when I'm choosing these movies, maybe go a little bit outside of a comfort zone in the genre that I watch, just because we all have different, you know, preferences for genres. And I think it wouldn't be fair if I just kept picking like, oh, I want to do dumb action movies or something like that. So trying to, you know, I thought this would be more horror, so I was slightly wrong. But yeah, it was just, I probably won't watch it again. I really didn't, you know, enjoy it through the first time here. But and then I also probably never touch anything with it again, because that video game has not aged well. So this was probably the last time I'll ever think of this movie. I'm glad I checked it off the list, as, you know, not having that curiosity anytime I hear someone mention it. So good for that.
You know what would be pretty cool if they did? A crossover between the Toxic Avenger and Ash from The Evil Dead.
I bet you that's a comic book.
I think that would make a pretty good comic book, at least, because they're both campy, and you've had Ash go up against zombie, the Marvel Universe zombies, Freddy and Jason and all that. So I could definitely see Ash versus the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, trying to see if I could find anything.
And Bruce Campbell would be, you know, he'd be fun enough to do it with, I'm sure. He wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't think there's really a want for the Toxic Avenger.
Oh. Well, they're making a reboot, so there's something there,
I guess.
Okay. You guys, you want to plug your shit?
Sure. At DeAquina122, my personal Twitter. Come hang out. We'll have some laughs. We'll have some cries. Whatever. And then our Real Play D&D Stranger Damies is also on Twitter and Instagram at Stranger Damies. So yeah, I mean, we're over 700 followers now. We're gaining some traction. We're getting some good followers and having some good interactions with people. I love the community. So, you know, thank you guys so much for, you know, making us feel a part of it. It's just a lot of fun. So just keep it up. We're getting good reviews, and yeah, it's a good time to be a part of the Stranger Damies crew. I'll say that.
Yeah, so the podcast airs every Wednesday. iTunes, Google Play, you know, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find it there. And make sure, as he said, Twitter feed at Stranger Damies. Just from my perspective, if you have any, you know, criticism, comments, anything on the game or want to point me in a direction of maybe a rule I got wrong or something, you know, I'm learning as I go along there. So feel free to send it to that Twitter account so that we can at least better the game for you guys out there. And then we also have the Game Vault podcast, which we'll have a new episode next Monday. We're recording it this weekend. Tom finally finished Final Fantasy VII Remake, so probably the last time we'll need to talk about that until the spoiler cast. So for those of you that have been hating hearing all about all that, it should be over this week. And then we'll probably be back streaming on a more regular schedule now that Jenny and I will both have, you know, computers that won't set on fire if we tried to stream with them. So be looking out on that. Check the Twitter feed. We're going to make Tom tweet out a schedule once we get it settled and then try and keep up with that. So, and then if you want to follow me on my personal Twitter, it's at OffTheMarkTweet. But a lot of times I'm just responding to people and friends and making inside jokes and Philly-centric jokes. So if you're more following me for the podcast, it's probably better to go to those Twitter accounts.
Okay. And this is They Call This a Movie. You can find us at theycallthisamovie.podbean.com. We're on all podcast streaming apps. Just look for They Call This a Movie, and we should pop right up. On all social media, we are available at The Main Damie, because themaindamie.com is the main website. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Main Damie. If you have any questions, comments, you want to suggest a movie to us, you could hit us up at themaindamie@gmail.com. And you could hit me up at AntDelvec on Twitter. If you want to, that's my personal. So if you want to hit me up there, you can. We're also a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. Find them at gvnation.com on all podcast streaming apps at Geek Vibes Nation. Just look for Geek Vibes Nation. They'll pop up on any stream. Bunch of great shows besides us. Dan mentioned Tia's show, a whole bunch of other shows that I can't think of off the top of my head. But if you're into geek stuff, comics, comic book movies, and anything else that's similar to that, you could probably find a show that you like. They're on all social media platforms. Just look for Geek Vibes Nation or GB Nation. It'll pop up. And that's going to do it for us. This is been the Toxic Avenger episode of They Call This a Movie, directed by Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Hirst. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Hirst to go fuck themselves.